That mic over there is hot.
Oh, it's good to know. I'm so excited.
Welcome back.
Can I take this chair?
So that's it.
We're going to come to an ending today.
Yeah, it's complicated. This issue has lots of layers to it. But breaking it down into parts so that we can understand it, discuss it, and question it, that is what we do here.
So if your question hasn't been answered yet, hang tight.
You never know. The next batch could include your question.
And it's coming very, very soon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the audio part of my thesis. After 55 pages of reading, stopping here and there to hear sound bites, you finally reached the end. Congratulations. I'm here to tie things up, to answer the last few questions, and to have one final say in connecting ancient Greek rhetorical forms to the podcast. I want to take a minute and differentiate active and passive listening. Passive listening occurs when people experience audio without engaging with its content. I engaged in passive listening on my run this morning, using T-Pain's music to distract me from the actual pain in my legs. Others engage in passive listening when plugging their headphones in to do homework or on their morning commutes, often placing their attention on stimuli outside of their headphones. Did T-Pain invite me into that song? Did he prompt me to engage with its content? Frankly, no. I listened, I enjoyed, I finished my run, but did not become a participatory listener by any means. And that's fine. Most audio productions do not have such expectations for their listeners. Active listening, on the other hand, prompts listeners to be attentive to and oftentimes involved in the audio content. Revisionist history, note to self, serial, the nod, and still processing all encourage their audience members to be active listeners. By engaging, extending, and challenging rhetorical forms, these podcasts encourage listeners to participate in their content. To understand this, let's recap how the podcasts are extending and updating each rhetorical genre. By engaging with these rhetorical forms, the podcast increases listener participation. Aristotle will be here to help us explain one last time.
Deliberative rhetoric in the podcast invites listeners into the decision-making process.
After presenting a problem, the podcast allows listeners to propose individual solutions. In doing so, it includes and involves them with the content.
Forensic rhetoric in the podcast encourages listeners to critique the nature of truth.
The podcast encourages listeners to put the trial back on the witness stand and invites them to decide new verdicts for themselves.
And finally, epideictic rhetoric, by way of praise or blame, interpolates listeners into cultural spaces.
Listeners are invited to enter and explore cultures and to define their own cultural identifications through the audio medium. By involving listeners to solve problems, critique verdicts, and establish culture, the media makes them active members of the podcast itself. The podcast elevates the listener to the polis, the juror's bench, and calls them to become citizens as well. This is not to generalize on all podcasts, however. Some podcasts do indeed encourage passive listening, like some talk shows, podcasts like The Moth that are fun stories, etc. But these particular podcasts that I've discussed throughout my thesis, by combining the old rhetorical genres with new technological forms, extend a hand out to listeners. They get them up and involved to participate in the content. All right, I'm going to get very meta-rhetorical on you here. If the podcast makes its listeners active participants in its content, then why doesn't this podcast episode do the same? I want to invite my readers and listeners directly into the conversation to allow them to become an active part of my podcast. I will ask my listeners questions in the typical deliberative, forensic, and epideictic genres of rhetoric as they relate to my thesis. So to start us off, deliberative rhetoric. This, as we know, aims to identify problems and propose solutions. So what problems did you see in my thesis during the writing process? Don't hold back.
Lots of the problems that came through were over-explaining, vague sentences, lots of organizational issues.
Sometimes her prose got wordy because she wanted to specify her referent.
And you like to work through your argument in a very kind of logical, deliberative way. And sometimes that led to a kind of repetitiveness or recursiveness in your argument.
So my professors identified argumentation and repetition as my two major problems. They also identified my hesitancy to make my thesis any bit creative.
The biggest hurdle Anna had to overcome in her writing was to stop thinking about this project in such academic terms. She had an amazing subject. The podcast is full of life, and the material she came up with was so vibrant. I wanted her to delve into it and reflect the energy of the podcast world.
Sometimes I would feel as if you could just let go of trying to make everything make sense in such a clear, connected way, you could kind of reach a more kind of lyrical, poetic register that would allow your argument to sing a bit rather than just speak.
Identifying those problems, I then went about two solutions. The first was to visit the writing studio once to twice a week to narrow my arguments, and the second was to challenge myself to make a creative podcast. Here's what my writing fellow, Sari Carter, said about my frequent visits to the writing studio.
She would leave with all these pages literally covered with notes and scribbles that could basically be modern works of art. It always made me smile when you would come to the writing studio straight after a run, the way you filled your life full, and the way you do fill your life full, and are dedicated to making this the best creation that you can.
And here's what my thesis director, Professor Teresa Gaudu, said about my podcast as a solution to increase my project's creativity.
It's almost as if that kind of creative piece is that kind of jump, that poetic jump that I was kind of asking for. And I think you're achieving it through the actual practice of doing the podcast.
All right, let's move on to the next branch, forensic rhetoric, one that accuses or defends someone on the stand. What do you accuse me of doing in writing my thesis? I turn to my roommates for this one.
If Anna spent less time on her thesis and more time doing the dishes, we'd have a much more cohesive and less chaotic suite.
My advisor, Professor Jay Clayton, had a response to this one.
Does Anna plan to be a dishwasher? Really, I think she should seek a career in podcasting or writing. These are skills that she brings to the world that are, in my view, a little more important than dishwashing.
I was also accused by many of my friends for spending way too much time in the library this semester and last, too, to be frank. And that's totally fair. I literally eat in that library cafe every single day of my life here. Once I recited the entire menu on a hike by memory. Elizabeth Winter, my brilliant writing group companion, defended me on this one.
Being in the library is fun, first of all, and they have really good snacks. We do a lot of thinking, and we check out a lot of books.
And here is Professor Gaudu defending the amount of work a project like this takes.
I really can't think of a student, Anna, who I would say has kind of embraced this process more fully than you. And while I can see that may be a downside for some of your friends who don't get full access to you at the end of their senior year, as a professor, it's been an incredibly fulfilling experience to watch you from the start of this project to the very end be all in all the time and just see it bloom in such wonderful ways.
Professor Gaudu's comment right there was also representative of the epideictic form, that of praise and blame to establish a common culture with listeners. I could go on and on about self-blaming during this process and how it relates to college culture. I'd ask myself questions like, what sort of crazy people even decide to write a thesis? Should I be spending my time differently as a senior student? What balance should I be striking to do a project that I really, really love, but to make sure I'm not missing out on anything? But in reflecting on this project, I end with praise. I'm proud of this piece, and I collected sound bites that adhere to the praise facet of the epideictic form as it relates to my thesis.
No, I mean, I could praise you from now till the end of time, really. That's how much I've enjoyed being your professor this year.
Anna showed extraordinary bravery in taking on such an unconventional topic as podcasts.
I loved listening to the podcast when I turned it on in the library in our regular study spot. I could not stop grinning.
Anna has impressed me so much with her tenacity, her engagement with all of the materials. Every single day she has been working on this.
It challenged her to combine audio analysis with audio production while writing an analytic paper of great length.
Thank you for joining me in this thesis, for becoming a part of its own heteroglossic conversations. I hope you've seen the podcast to be an exciting adaptation of rhetorical forms that continues to soar in popularity within our age. I encourage you all to use the Voice Memos app on your iPhone to export those files as MP3s and to use GarageBand and other editing softwares to make podcasts and to start conversations of your own. I felt it was only appropriate to get my listeners to sign off for this podcast. I'll start us off. Thanks for listening.
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 Thanks for listening.